I must ask you a question. I'll shave it for later. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. This is like the oldest. This is the oldest pun in the book.
It really was. Like, my man could not have got more medieval on our asses if he tried. Welcome to episode 457 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison. And we got the band back together because, honeys, we are IndyCaring. And this time we crossed the border in a Toronto for the IndyCar Grand Prix of Toronto. Hey, remember this time last year when we were all exploding over an Alex Palou contract dispute? Wasn't that a fun time we all had together?
It was a fun time. And I expect Alex Palou to be put on gardening leave any weekend now. What do you mean he's still driving the 10 car? What do you mean he finished second with a broken front wing?
The only thing he's leaving is his boot prints on everyone's ass. Repeatedly.
Yeah. Massively. Boots to asses. Meat being tenderized, etc., etc. Amazingly,
fried chicken.
In this case, it's fried chicken, maybe a blended waffle and some maple syrup for good measure. But amazingly,
blended waffle.
Amazingly, we were this close to the first four race winning streak in North American single seat racing since 2006. But he was beaten by the man without a mustache, everybody's new favorite Danish friend, Christian Lundgaard. We have another new IndyCar winner, and my God, what a dominant performance he had. The front two kind of basically just kind of embarrassed the field on this one for me more than anything else. So we'll talk a little bit about all of that and the ramifications that come with that, because I wanted to get into a little bit about the road to Indy as well in regards to Lundgaard, and maybe a certain other ladder is getting its spot in the queue jumped at the moment. So we'll talk a little bit about that. And of course, we'll also talk about RJ potentially getting his old man's, because, apparently IndyCar's thinking about moving the season finale to Nashville. Huh?
Thinking about it.
End these thoughts immediately.
It's not a healthy thought. I do not recommend it. But round the horn with me, of course, as you probably already guessed by now. First up is RJ O'Connell. Good to see you back, man. How are you?
Going on camping trips is fun. I needed that refresh. I really, really needed the social media detox. What I did not need is mosquitoes biting at my ankles.
Oh,
every second, every minute, every hour on the hour. That was not fun.
That's what you get for coming up to the northeastern United States.
Yeah, I could have just stayed down south where I could just drive to any one of my favorite sports teams games in like 2 hours or less. I mean, sure, our rights would be traumatically infringed upon at every given moment, but yeah, on the other hand, the bugs are about the same.
Yeah, the only thing you get when you come here is just hellacious winters.
Yeah, to be fair, as a guy that was also in a clubhouse tent a couple of weeks ago, the bugs are not fun, trust me. Also, you realize
you're a fancy bitch.
I was a fancy bitch. Like, you know, it was a tent with Wi-Fi and a water tap and everything. It was proper fancy. No expense spared for the TV and the PlayStation 5. It's a struggle, but someone's got to get through it. Also, there's one thing I did learn from that camping experience. It's that your camp will amplify whatever atmosphere is the atmosphere at that point in time. If it's hot, you're cooking. If it's cold, you are freezing. There is no middle ground here on this
one. What if it's lukewarm?
And it's perfectly adequate. And I still could barely sleep. I gambled for it without a coat, and the first night I slept there, it was like 9 degrees. Celsius in the UK, which was fucking freezing for a day in July. So let me tell you, it was a struggle. But also joining me, we've also got Cam Buckley. Hello, Cam. How's it going?
I'm just kind of in a state of shock, honestly, after having watched that race. How?
Yeah, that's a fair assumption. That is a fair shout. Taking that all in is a trip and a half, let me tell you, because there is a lot to dissect from that one. So, like I said, Lundgaard, a bit of Palou, a bit of the road to Indy, and hey, maybe we're ending in Nashville next time. We'll have to wait and see. But before we get into that, here's the places you can find us real quick. We are at motorsport101.com. That is our website. If you're a fan of that, you could check out all of our podcasts are on there, as well as some extra written content from yours truly. If you want some bonus thoughts on this race by me, you can check that in the blog section on this very race, as well as part one of my mid-season reviews for Formula One so far. It's one of a two-part series on that one. I might do IndyCars as well, depending on how busy I am over between now and Spa. We'll have to wait and see. But yeah, in the meantime, you can check that out if you haven't already. Look out for Valtteri Bottas's arse cheeks. Don't say I didn't warn you on that one. I'm giving you a heads up via an exclusiveness of listening to the podcast. You're welcome, internet. You can't say I wasn't fair here. So do check that out if you haven't already. If you really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101 for early access to the show and supporters club of our Discord server. Because these episodes live as they are being recorded, if you're that way inclined. If you want to follow us on social media, you can at Twitter, motorsport_101. If you want to follow our personal handles, you can follow me at Dre_WTF1, RJ at RJ O'Connell, and Cam at CBuckley917. You can also follow us on Instagram at motorsport101.
Are we on Threads yet?
Have we
just decided that, like, we've used Threads as enough of a bargaining chip to get Elon to stop doing whatever kind of bullshit he's been up to lately?
Unfortunately, he hasn't stopped. I know I'm on there just at the same handle because, well, I want to sit on that username just in case Twitter ever goes down all the way.
Yes. Yeah, it's a nice security method. We know we're not on Threads yet officially, but I will consider it if Twitter goes the way of the dodo. So we'll have to wait and see on that one. But if you want to follow me personally at on Shorts, on Threads, I said Shorts, damn. I'm thinking of YouTube. It's all the bloody same.
All the social medias are blending into a compost.
It's all the fucking same these days. No, but
send us a Blue Sky invite, please.
Yeah. If you'd like to follow us on Ping for iTunes, don't.
No, you can follow me on Napster instead. It's right alongside Friends Reunited, if you're that way inclined. If you want to follow me personally on Friends, you can at DreWTF1 if you really are that way inclined. It's for all the stuff that I would never be able to post under the day job. Ding! So, with that in mind and without further ado, let's get into IndyCar's Grand Prix of Toronto.
Where people are making, I'm guessing they're making smarter financial decisions than the local basketball team. I mean, good, yes, for Scotty Barnes, because I endorse wage theft wherever people can get it, because it's not my money, but it is just funny.
It is very funny. It was the biggest weekend of his racing career for Rahal Letterman Lanigan Racing's Christian Lundgaard. After an amazing dry, wet, dry qualified session, he beat Scott McLaughlin to pole position for his second career P1 award and would then go on to dominate the Toronto GP, leading 54 out of the 85 laps and finally stopping Alex Palou's ridiculous winning streak to win by nearly 12 seconds. More on that later. And as a result, he finally got to collect his bet with best friend Peter and shave his mustache off live on the post-race podium. Gentlemen, just how impressive was Lundgaard's weekend?
I have only four words to kick this off. Alpine Academy, common success.
Hey! It's like all the Alpine Academy have success, just not with Alpine. It's great.
Well, yeah, that's the key, is you stay away from Alpine and eventually everything comes good for you.
We're
yeah,
almost approaching the one-year anniversary of the Oscar Piastri tweet, too.
Oh, yeah. That is very much almost a thing.
We are at the one-year anniversary of every driver transaction needing two-factor verification, but no, Christian Lundgaard was fantastic. He felt like a win was coming. Yes, we know Rahal Letterman Lanigan has been struggling. Remember, it was just 2 months ago, Christian Lundgaard had to escape yet another last-row shootout just to make the Indianapolis 500. They are very, very deficient in terms of their oval street game, but on road and street courses especially, Lundgaard has been the table setter. He has been the benchmark. And now with this first win, you got to start wondering, has he already crossed in that elite threshold before he even makes it up to an elite team?
The ovals are still a bit sus for me. I know part of that is the team he drives for, because Rahal Letterman-Lanigan Racing has stunk on ovals for a good year and change. But on road and street courses, he's been a top five driver in the series for a good year and a half, in my opinion. His road and street form, even going through last year, was incredible.
It was excellent on debut. Remember that one off in 2021 at the Brickyard Grand Prix? Yeah. And he just snuck in out of nowhere and put it in the facets.
Yeah, on debut, finished 12th on debut. Like, that was incredible. Like, the signs have been there from day one with Lundgaard in IndyCar.
Oh, that's right. There wasn't a facets. He just qualified fourth, which is still incredible.
Oh, yeah.
It's actually first better. Time.
It was actually even better, yeah, when you put it like that. I mean...
yeah, I mean, the signs have been there for a while. And of course, he got a pole earlier this year, and we'll talk about the other protagonist, the eventual protagonist of that race in a little bit. But... yeah, all I really needed was just the right scenario to get to the front. And really, besides a series of unfortunate events, which jumbled up the strategy, pretty much led the race from lights to flag.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty much.
On merit.
Comprehensive victory. And I'm thinking, if you're Rahal Letterman-Lanigan Racing, right, you got to do everything in your power to keep this guy around. Because
he is the only good thing right now.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously, I think we'd love to see Christian Lundgaard in an environment where he can regularly succeed on every kind of racetrack. It'd be cool to see him in like a Ganassi, a Penske, or an Andretti or a McLaren type team. But like, if you're Rahal Letterman-Lanigan, you're thinking, wow, we're not letting this guy go for cheap, because this is a guy we can build around.
He's a guy you can build around, and he still has over a year left on his contract. He's technically tied down until the end of 2024. So if anybody wants him, they're going to have to sit down with Bobby and negotiate a buyout. And that could get expensive because, as Cam was rightly said, he is the shining star of this team. Like, Rahal Letterman-Lanigan Racing has struggled for a good year and change again. And Lundgaard is seventh in the championship.
Well, and I mean, look on the other side of the look at the other garages at RLL. You have Graham Rahal, who... on the road courses, has had a couple flashes, but bumped from the Indy 500.
I was going to say, he's been better post-crew chief firing. Definitely. He's gone back into the top 10 in two of the last three races. Rahal, to his credit, has driven okay since his crew chief got sacked.
But Jack Harvey has been abhorrent in that car.
Dude. It's crazy to think he had one of the best performances just to get in the 500 and bump his teammate out, not knowing, of course, that Stefan Wilson was going to get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since then, it's been nowhere. But
before then, and through all of last year, it was nowhere. I mean, he caused an enormous lap one crash, which wiped out himself, wiped out,
both white cars.
It was both Voits, Ferrucci and Benjamin Peterson.
Tom Blomqvist,
who was standing in for Simon Pagenaud this weekend.
Tom
Blomqvist.
It gave us the very funny graphic of Graham Rahal knowing exactly how to get the car in reverse and then exactly which escape road to take in order to get around and not get trapped.
Which we'll never see.
Alex Rossi bent his front wing and almost went a lap down for a good chunk of that race. Actually got back on the lead lap, but it didn't really matter in the end. He was in that wreck. And Ryan Hunter-Reay, who was in the middle of that three-car sandwich.
It takes some doing to wipe out plus five cars in an IndyCar crash.
It's the worst we've had since Benjamin Peterson's T-bone at St. Pete at the start of the season, where he drove straight into the side of Devlin DeFrancesco like his name was Bill Goldberg.
And Harvey, in this instance, I mean, he just ran the two cars on his outside right into the wall. Enormous bruh moment. Please, no Jack.
Like, we love Jack on this show, but, like, it's getting harder and harder to justify his continued existence in this series. And I've got a bad feeling that what's worse for me is if they chop him, they're going to probably put Yuri Vips in that car.
I think they should put Linus Lundqvist in, and I'll get to that.
I agree.
I think it is very cool to see Christian Lundgaard after this win setting ahead of Will Power, Colton Herta, Alexander Rossi, all these guys in the standings. There are only 6 IndyCar drivers that stand atop of Christian Lundgaard in the driver standings in a setup that is deficient on 1/3 of the courses that we go to.
Yeah.
And isn't exactly great on the other 2/3 most of the time.
No, exactly. And yeah, he's found the way to make it work because, like I said, his road and street course form has been exceptional. The argument is he elite. I'm not sure I would go that far just yet. He is still missing 1/3 of his game.
I want to see more.
I would like to see a little bit more. But if he keeps going with his road and street course pace like this, he is going, like, for me, there is no argument left. He is the number one contender for the 10 seat if Alex Palou is leaving. That cemented it for me. I was debating between him and David Malukas. For me, there's no longer an argument. It's Christian Lundgaard, and you plug him in immediately. Yeah. If you get the opportunity, like, he is exceptional. And you forget, he's still only 22 years old.
21. Like,
21
he has,
even.
His 22nd birthday will be later this week as a recording.
Yeah. Hey, happy birthday, Christian.
Hell of a birthday present to yourself.
Yeah, first win, and he doesn't have to look like a porn star anymore from the 80s. Good job.
Clean shaven face. Mustache. I don't think the mustache looked good on him. I'm sorry. We could say that now because it's gone. It did not look good on him.
Winning always looks good.
Oh yeah,
it does. And I hate to be that guy for a minute because there was a lot of people on Twitter that responded to this in a very negative fashion. Like, I'm sorry, but if you were mocking the fact that his best friend Peter was crying on the broadcast when he crossed the line because he was so happy for his best friend's success, you're a sexist, homophobic loser.
Fellas, is it gay to have feelings?
Apparently so, according to dude bros who were following Matt Arletcher on Twitter. Which was doubly disappointing because Matt's one of the bigger IndyCar tweeters out there, and he's clearly cultivated a load of IndyCar fans, and a good chunk of them were just straight up homophobic in the replies.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible. Do not do this. Like, man. I've said this before on this show, one of the many, many reasons why men have mental health problems, in this country especially, is because we've had it beaten into our heads for the last 50 years that we have to man up, be tough, hide emotion. It's a sign of weakness. You put that shit away.
Don't cry.
And you don't cry.
Don't show your friends affection.
No.
I mean, I've solved the problem myself by just being ragingly queer everywhere, but I'm not most people in motorsports. So don't take my experience as, like, you know, a representative of everybody in the sport.
No. Definitely not. I mean, I was like, Ajay, you said you're a raging queer. That automatically means you're exempt from the majority of motorsport because diversity. What's that? So yeah, don't do that. It's a horrible thing to do. Like, we're better than this, IndyCar, and I'd like to think that most of the fan base gets down better than this. But that was, I saw a significant amount of homophobic and sexist tweets regarding that moment on TV, which is very disappointing, quite frankly. But no, please don't do that. Like, it's not on. It's far more fragile and insecure, in my opinion, than the image you have perceived in your head about crying on a live TV show. That's what I would like to say on that. And with Lundgaard's win, another win for a European ladder mover in recent years, with Marcus Armstrong also a career-high 7th on the day in the Chip Ganassi car, and Callum Ilott still in the mix, I wonder, is the road to Indy being overlooked for the Europe ladder's success?
This is an interesting one. This was actually brought up over the course of the weekend by I guess friend of the program, Marshall Pruitt. He was nice enough to give me
I enjoy a quality Marshall Pruitt post.
Yeah. Friend of the friend of the show. Basically, it boiled down to, you know, a lot of teams in the IndyCar paddock, if they had a choice between picking a driver out of Indy Next or picking a driver out of Formula 2, they will likely go with the Formula 2 guy. And it's strange because Formula 2 does not race on ovals. Indy Next really only races on one oval, and that's Gateway Motorsports Park. So it's in the lower steps of what was the Road to Indy, now the USF Pro Series, they don't do a lot of oval racing. So it's basically just like, well, if you're going to go with any one driver with limited oval or super speedway experience, why not take the Formula 2 driver? You can shape them into being a very good to great oval racer, depending on the package. And you arguably have a more well-rounded road and street course racer.
And yeah, that's pretty much was exactly the point of the point that was brought up, because he was getting it from people within IndyCar. And that's just it, is that if you're in the Road to Indy right now, there's really you have no competitive advantage in the driver marketplace, because for a while, when there was not a lot of ovals on the junior ladder for IndyCar, but certainly enough that you can form into an oval racer. I mean, Carlos Munoz.
Yeah.
Beast. Wait,
incredible. Remember when Max Chilton won a race at Iowa Speedway, lights to flag?
Yeah. And that was a legitimate competitive advantage versus other drivers and other ladders. That's just frankly gone now. I mean, if you need to shape someone, to your point, RJ, into an oval racer, you can put them in the sim.
Yeah.
And have them run on there and then, you know, work out the gap between sim and real life, you know, over practice sessions. Yeah. And Gateway is only representative of Gateway. It is not representative of a place like, say, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
No, I agree. I actually did find the tweet, and it was inspired by a spotter by the name of David Hunt, who spotted a gentleman by the name of Felix Sorales when he won at Milwaukee 8 years ago in Indy Next. He said, I miss racing at my awesome mile oval, but what I miss more about this series, Indy Next, is what the role of the spotter used to be. In my opinion, the lack of oval racing has changed the dynamic. Marshall Pruitt quote tweeted saying, I'm hearing on a more frequent basis from IndyCar team owners and decision makers that the lack of significant oval training in lights / Next has changed their views on hiring talent from the series.
Yeah, it's taken away their X factor in the driver market. And when you look over in F2, you have cars that, at least on paper, are quite a bit closer to IndyCar, at least in terms of, you know, horsepower output. You have a variety of different tracks over in the European ladder that you can learn different techniques on. And chances are, if you're in the F2 kind of system at the moment, you're probably there, unless if you are good enough to wipe the floor with everyone and win a championship in 1 year, you're probably going to go up into an F1 seat. Maybe not now that most of them have been filled, but for the last 4 or 5 years, you would plug those people in right away.
Yeah. You know what's not helping, mm-hmm. I don't think, is the fact that this current crop of Indy Next graduates, first of all, it's incomplete, because in a just society, Linus Lundqvist would have a full-time ride with a competitive team.
100%.
He's not. His prize funding got slashed, and that's one of the things that I did not like. So the graduates we have are Stingray Robb, who's been completely anonymous, and Benjamin Peterson, who outside of Indy 500 qualifying has been completely anonymous. Marcus Armstrong's going to win Rookie of the Year without doing a full schedule. And if you look at the last few Rookie of the Years, Lundgaard was an F2 at Sport. McLaughlin came from Supercars, so not really in discussion. Renus VK came straight out of Indy Lights. Then you have Ed Jones in 2017, Gabby Chavez 2015, Carlos Munoz 2014, Tristan Foche 2013. But
you go back, RJ, and you look at those Indy Lights schedules, and they are more representative of what you see in IndyCar.
Yeah, yeah.
A couple more ovals sprinkled in there, a couple more pure, like full-blown, full-blooded road courses in there. And the other thing is, I mean, beyond just the fact that the cars are a little bit more similar, you've probably got more experience straight up if you're in F2 for a year or two, because you've just got more time. You're just a more seasoned driver and more seasoned wheel to wheel as well, which in IndyCar these days, you need to know what you're doing wheel to wheel, or you're going to get bounced off the road.
This is what I was going to say. Like, across the board, you're probably better funded to be in F2 in the first place, because F2, you're looking at least 3 million euros a year now for a decent seat.
Especially now, given what we know about, I mean, Lundgaard was in, as we know, the spare parts ART.
Right. Like, he was in the it's known on F1 Twitter circles as the curse of the second ART seat. Which, ironically, because in the first one at the time was some guy called Marcus Armstrong. Look how that turned out for him. Yeah. The way it is right now, F1, this is just my perspective. F1's in a bottleneck. I think F1's got its best top 16 it's ever had. Like, look at it right now. Who is the 16th best driver in F1? Maybe someone like Yuki Tsunoda?
Yeah, like, the first name that came to mind right now is like Valtteri Bottas, and you could argue like when he's on it, he's like a top 10 driver, and when he's off of it, he's
someone
the guy who won when he was on it could reasonably often outqualify Lewis Hamilton, you know.
Right.
Casual seven-time world champion.
Roughly a top 16 baseline. A Tsunoda, maybe a Zhou Guan Yu, somewhere in that sort of ballpark, right? The last 7 or 8 years of F1's junior scene has been a golden age. Like, it's the backbone of the sport has been the junior European ladder of the last half decade plus. Verstappen, Leclerc, Norris, Russell, Gasly, you know, Tsunoda. You could go on. There's been like that's the backbone of the next generation of this sport in a post-Hamilton, post-Alonso sort of environment. There's a bottleneck. I remember writing about this 2 years ago when Ferrari had Kanna Mailot, Robert Schwartzman, and Mick Schumacher at the same time. Like, that's how loaded they were at that point. Like,
and now Eilert's already in. Schwartzman's already had IndyCar tests.
And is there a rapper?
Yeah. Who would have known?
Yeah, I mean, realistically, unless someone in that lower handful really fucks up, sorry, Nick DeVries, you're not going to slot new drivers into those seats for a couple of years. And even then, Red Bull just picked Daniel Ricciardo up off the shelf, dusted him off, and installed him.
Right. It's the luxury they have of having the amount of resources that they do. If you're a mid-level Formula 2 driver, like a Yuri Vips, like a Marcus Armstrong was, Kanna Mainot probably a little bit better than that, Liam Lawson probably a little bit better than that, you are now looking at the road, like Indy Lights and the IndyCar series as a genuinely viable alternative, because you don't need as much funding, as proven by people like Carl Kirkwood, who was able to get into the IndyCar paddock with a $1.2 million paycheck. That's peanuts compared to F2 drivers.
But even then, with Kyle, it still took a year of him suffering at Foyt.
Right.
Because even IndyCar, in a perfect scenario where Kyle Kirkwood had the most glittering junior record you could possibly have.
It was perfect.
And they still didn't trust him to plug him in right away.
Right. And
because at that time, they had another driver who finished just a little bit below him in the standings, but had a lot more money. And he's probably not helping the reputation of a lot of these drivers who are stepping up out of Indy Lights and out of Indy Next. It's strange because on the other hand, you have guys like Colton Herta. Colton Herta did not spend his entire junior Formula career racing in America. But he did finish in Indy Lights. Pato Award's weird because, like, he was a road to Indy driver, and then he wasn't, and then he was again, and then he wasn't, and then he's back into IndyCar in a premier seat.
And that took the collapse of his team and a series of other events to get him eventually into a scenario where he could shine and then jump him up into McLaren. So, I mean, if anything, it's proving the problems with the road to Indy even more. That Kirkwood had as perfect a record as you could possibly have. And it took a series of convenient events to slot him into Andretti. Pato Award's career, for all intents and purposes, was on life support for 2 years before it finally got back on track.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Red Bull.
And, I mean, there's a lot of really appealing drivers in F2 right now.
Yeah. there'll be a bunch of dudes in that series right here and right now that will be looking across the pond and thinking this could be a way out, because at the moment, I don't think it's a massively A++ tier Formula 2 field at the moment. Frederik Vesti's going to be a bottleneck. He's not going to make it to F1 if he wins the title this year. Ayumu Iwasa might, but he's behind Liam Lawson in the queue, who is currently killing it in Japan right now, ironically.
Third win of the season, tied a record held by a Schumacher.
Yes,
but not
indeed.
The one you're thinking of.
No. You know, that you've got Fio Porsche, who's already got an Alfa Romeo Junior seat potentially lined up if Alfa wants to pull the trigger on a driver change, but even that looks unlikely to me. I don't think there's any good reason to get rid of
one of them. The last issue right now with Alfa Romeo in Formula One is their driver lineup,
right?
Because that car is celery on untoasted white bread.
Ooh, you know, so you look at the situation, anybody below those three, and you're thinking, why am I here? Felipe Drugovic won the title last year and didn't even get a whiff of an F1 seat. Like, nope. The nearest he got was a cup of coffee and a Lance Stroll injury replacement test. You're going to look stateside because that's the next best single-seater series. The racing is great. You've seen other people make success out of it. Christian Lundgaard, Marcus Armstrong, Callum Ilott. There'll be more coming over soon, most definitely.
We didn't even talk about like Felix Rosenqvist, who finished off overseas. We didn't talk about Robert Wickens, was a DTM driver through and through before he went to IndyCar.
Yeah.
Right. So this is the way it's going. And in IndyCar, it's a little bit easier because the grids are a lot bigger. And yes, like, I think it's right. I worry for this generation of Indy Next drivers because I've watched their series. There is genuine talent there. And none of this is to take a jab at them being bad. Like, Nolan Siegel is a great...
Yeah. That's exactly it. We're not saying they're bad,
right.
If anything.
Yeah. Nolan Siegel is the truth. You get that young man a competitive seat next year, and he will win Rookie of the Year straight up.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Christian Robinson is a good driver. Hunter McElroy is talented. Louis Foster is an ace. He's just been very unlucky all year long. But Louis Foster is fast as hell. You know, yeah, Reese Gold has moved around and been very good.
You have a genuinely great top 8 or 9 drivers in Indy Next right now, where I could say slot them into a lower tier Indy car ride. But that's not how the teams are going to think.
No.
The teams are going to look at what has the most upside for them. Part of that is, unfortunately, at the end of the day, money.
Yeah.
And if someone can come over and they have just as much upside as a driver, but they bring you money, you're going to go with the guy with money.
What's the biggest dispute keeping Marcus Ericsson from signing a new deal in the 8 car right now?
Fresh cheddar.
Yes, more of that Husky chocolate money, because Chip is a cheapskate and wants Marcus to keep paying for his seat. Even though he has been one of the best drivers in IndyCar for the last 2 years now.
Yeah, his face is on the Borg Warner.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Was unlucky not to get it twice.
Dre,
yeah.
Before we wrap this up, Dre, if put yourself in the shoes of Mark Miles or who is ever running Indy Next right now, or just like whoever's running USF Pro, what do you need to fix this problem?
You need to... you need to talk to your IndyCar team owners and say, what are you looking for in your talent, first and foremost? And you mold, I think you mold your answers off of that. If it is true what Marshall Pruitt is saying, then I've got no reason to disbelieve him. Yeah. You need to be adding 2 or 3 more ovals to the IndyCar calendar instead of all the road street tracks. There is no reason why they couldn't bring back the Freedom 100.
You need to race up the Speedway. The Speedway is all. We know this about IndyCar. It's been proven for the last 3 decades. The Speedway is all.
Right. Like, you bring back the Freedom 100. Yeah. Go back to having 3 or 4 ovals on the calendar in a similar ratio to what the main series is. Because right now, IndyCar has 5 oval rounds a year out of 17 races. There's no reason why Indy Next can't do 4 out of 16 or whatever the ratio is.
We have Iowa this year, so that's 2, but there could be more.
And I think 100%, Dre, I think you hit the nail on the head. The market is not biting. You need to ask the market, what do you need from us?
Right.
And if you are Roger in all of this, because owns the whole shebang, we said this about the main series. We need to say it about the junior series. Inject some goddamn cash into it.
Thank you. This is what my next point was going to be. We know the money is there. Like, and I don't like using him as an example, but I'm going to because it highlights part of the problem. You've written two checks for Miles Rowe. One under the table, one over the table. And yeah. I love Miles Rowe as much as the next guy. He's an immense talent.
He's going to win the USF Pro.
He'll probably be in next year. He's an incredibly talented young man. However, it screams of a PR move to write him those two checks to keep his career going when you've already lost half of your mainline series big price to get into the main event in the first place. And
junior ladder is on, let's call it what it is. The junior ladder in IndyCar has been on life support for as long as I can remember.
Right.
Driver that is being marketed above everybody is 17th in the table. Not going to say who it is. Probably know who it is. Got their first top 10 finish. Good for them. But, you know,
if that's your biggest marketing, it's like Jimmy Johnson in the main series, right? Jimmy Johnson is one of the most incredible NASCAR drivers I've ever watched. He is a marketing wet dream for IndyCar. And he came over and he was the pits.
No, the point I was going to get at here is that you need to find a way to make that graduation price check back up to the $1.2 million that it was when Kyle Kirkwood won the series a year and a half ago. Because at this current rate, the reality is they need to compete with Europe. If they're not competing with Europe as a guaranteed seat with a big old check to fund the seat, that's the one incentive you've got over Europe. Guaranteed Absolutely. Promotion. That's Absolutely. The one thing you've got over Europe.
Remember, this was one of the many points of contention regarding how drivers were getting into IndyCar, or rather how drivers stopped getting into IndyCar from the natural American ladder, that helped blow up American open wheel racing in the mid-90s. That was one of the key points as to why we had the split.
Right.
Yeah.
And instead of investing in and building up the junior ladder, the Georges just stuck a 10,000 pound wad of dynamite up American Wheel Open Racing's ass and lit the fuse.
I would rather we go back to in Indy next to the days where we only had 10 to 12 full-time runners if it meant the person that won had a better chance of getting into the big show. I get why they've structured it the way that they have now with more individual race prize money. It keeps the junior teams running from check to check, from weekend to weekend. I do understand the logic. The problem is you're going to end up driving into a brick wall anyway, because right now the European imports are doing better than the American graduates have. Kyle Kirkwood being the exception. And you need to incentivize making your IndyCar team drivers pick from your own ladder. Because the moment they start looking across the pond and start looking up people like Nick DeVries and Tom Blomqvist, you haven't got a prayer. The road to Indy can't compete with that. And don't get me wrong, like I said, Nolan Siegel is an ace talent. Christian Rasmussen is a very good driver.
It isn't an indictment on the talent in Indy next. It's what's going to appeal to a team owner in the main series that is going to help sustain them too.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about Alex Palou. We got to talk about Alex Palou.
You know how crazy it is that Christian Lundgaard just put the field in a casket across the entire weekend. And it was probably the second most impressive drive out of everybody. Alex, the championship elect, looked like he might finally have a chink in his armor after being caught out and starting P15 with a round one qualifying elimination in the wet, dry, wet. But then he came back through the field, and despite destroying his nose cone and having a crooked, dragging front wing for just under half the race, he finished second while saving fuel. How?
Oh my god. Look, I'm not going to take the heat for volume warnings on this podcast long term.
Buckley, you fucker. No, I was going to say, but, why are you making my editing more difficult?
Time. That is the only... What the hell was this?
Me and Cam were watching this race on our Discord server in disbelief at what we were watching. Like, I've never whipped out my MacBook to start typing up the race review so fucking fast all year, because I was just like, what in the fuck was that? For those who don't know the context, there was a restart because Romain Grosjean hit the wall. The man is having a dreadful run of form. That's a discussion for another day. Kyle Kirkwood, on that restart, bumps into a slow-moving Helio Castroneves. Castroneves spins out. Polo is directly behind Helio. Polo has to take evasive action to avoid Helio's car. He brushes the outside wall and it cracks the front nose cone of Polo's car to the point where it makes the front wing janky and it leans to his right-hand side. It's dragging across the ground and it got worse as the race went on. There was still nearly 40 laps to go when we went green again. Alex Palou finished in second, and Colton Herta, who is back in form by all accounts, couldn't touch him.
Burned more fuel on the same strategy to the point where he ran out over the line, and Palou still had a little bit in reserve. How?
It's amazing that the man, we mentioned it earlier, was on the brink. Because he was the front of the queue of the potential one-stoppers before we got the extra few laps of caution for the Kirkwood incident, which put everybody on the one-stopper. Because they're like, okay, that's enough, yellow. Everybody in for a one-stopper. Palou probably wins that race if it wasn't for Kirkwood's spin.
Yeah, without the broken front wing. I mean, how much is a front wing that is shattered and dragging on the ground on the right side and up over the tire on the left side worth around a street track?
Reckoned it was about 0.8 of a second, right?
I would think so. I've talked to a couple of the technical homies. They've done some of the napkin math. It was at least over half a second. And I mean, Lundgaard didn't have to save fuel. He had five more laps of fuel on board. He was saving fuel late on because he could. He was not that much faster, given the context.
The back end of that race, he was matching Lundgaard's pace.
That shouldn't be possible.
I have never seen anything like that in the 7 years I've been watching IndyCar. I said in my script notes here, pencil it in. My drive of the year is locked in. Nothing's stopping that. Nothing. It's over. Give him the award now.
It is wonderful. I'm putting my hand up here. Can I play devil's advocate and say that this was less of an impressive performance and more of a race direction failure for not giving him the meatball flag?
Probably. You probably have a point there, because that front wing was turbo fucked for the last 20 laps. I mean, it was being held together by the wrap on the car, spit, Kleenex, and toothpicks.
Oh, don't get me wrong. Like, I think this was individually, like, an incredible drive. Like, you win your championships on your bad days. Alex Palou had a terrible day. His bad day in the summer is second.
He has not finished outside of the top five since the opening round in St. Pete.
Christian Lundgaard is the first person to gain any points on Alex Palou since the Indy 500.
What?
when he finished outside the top five at St. Pete, he finished a terrible, no good eighth.
His bad day is an Indy 500 where he got speared in the pit lane and finished fourth.
Before this day, he'd won four out of the previous five, and somehow this second place was more impressive than all of them. Like, this is otherworldly level skill from Alex Palou that he's exhibiting right now. I've been watching IndyCar for 7 years. I have never, ever seen anything like this in this series.
I don't know if I've ever seen anything like that in any series.
The only thing that comes to mind out of recent memory was, like, I hate to bring up his name, but Paul Tracy tried this several years ago. He tried driving with a damaged wing. He couldn't see his damaged wing, and he eventually crashed out of the race. That was about like 18 years ago, back when there were two IndyCars.
Yeah, I'd say like 19 years ago with Tony Stewart driving around on two wheels in a shattered Crawford Daytona prototype. That's and the only thing that stopped that win was additional mechanical failure. That's about equal to this.
Yeah.
This is beyond anything else in this series can produce.
Yeah, Zoe, who was actually down there in person, bless her, and I've not mentioned her enough on the show, she was actually in Toronto and saw it. Like, again, two messages from her that I think sums it up quite well in capital letters. That boy gave me such a heart attack when he hit the wall because it was literally 30 feet from her own seat. And the other one was Barry Wonser was on his radio being like, please don't push. Please stop trying to push. Like,
yeah, because he was riding the bumps and the front wing was bouncing up and down on the bumps. And it was cracking the nose cone across. If that falls off his car,
it's over.
It goes under his front tires. He goes flying off into the wall.
Yeah, yeah, that's what happened with Paul Tracy.
Yeah.
It's over. He was still as fast, if not faster, than Colton Herter, arguably the fastest road and street course driver in this series when he's fully dialed in.
While saving more fuel on the same strategy.
With willpower, Scott Dixon, and Joseph Newgarden behind him.
Zoe put in our chat, it's his version of the Dixon Portland lap one crash. He's just assimilating all of Dixon's powers like he's the thing.
Yeah, it's like, give me all of your power, I'm going to defeat Broly in one punch. That's what Alex Palou is right now. This is insane. Like, so again,
driver of the year, because drive of the year, I agree, locked in. Driver of the year should not be this hard this year.
No,
it feels like it's gonna be.
It should just be Max Verstappen in a runaway,
and it just isn't.
It just isn't. It just isn't because Alex Palou is. I mean, his average finish so far this season is less than pie.
In a series explicitly designed for that not to be possible. His average finish went up with a shattered front wing.
3.1, Cameron! 3.1! What is this? This is ridiculous!
This is one of the greatest seasons that we'll ever see in IndyCar.
This might be like looking back to the last person who made the jump, really, in Juan Pablo Montoya, because all the talk with Palou potentially getting a ride in the other big open wheel series next year. This is like on that level, if not better, than what Montoya was producing before Williams picked him up. It's nuts.
All he's missing is the 500 win, and it's like a one for one of Montoya's resume.
And it very well could have happened this year had he not been impaled in the pit lane.
I mean, you look at Palou's last three 500s. This year, he was robbed by Rinus VK launching into him in the pits. The year before that, he was screwed on an emergency caution and emergency service. The year before that, he lost by four car lengths. He's been the best 500 driver for the last 3 years as well. He just hasn't won the damn thing. He's just been arguably the fastest man overall for 3 years running.
And the guy he lost to in that time where he lost by a couple car lengths, Helio Castroneves.
The greatest 500 racer of all time.
Yes. Not bad company to lose to.
No.
It's just, and it's the fact that there is no end to it. You think, he puts in a performance and you think, okay, this is as good as it can get. And then he goes out next week. And in defeat, he's been more impressive than any of his wins thus far.
There's only one even small feather to the cap. He hasn't won an oval yet. And he's got two chances to do so this weekend in Iowa.
Make a bunch of money doing that.
And it's worth mentioning, if he does win one of those, because he's got three chances, because he still have Gateway later on in the year. But if he wins just one of those three ovals, he'll be collecting a cool $500,000 bonus check for the Triple Crown that Joseph Newgarden won last year. Remember, half of it does go to charity. But Palou picks up an extra $500,000 for his trouble if he could pull off the Triple Crown. He's got three cracks at it. He's got three chances at it. And I think he's the only man in the field that's even won two out of three this year, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. And I mean, in those oval performances, I mean, he finished... he finished top five in Texas on dead tires.
Yep.
And then was the fastest guy in the 500 and aforementioned Rinus VK spearing. It's not like his oval form has been bad this year. He is absolutely capable.
He was right there in Texas as well. He was what, third that day? And he was third on
dead tires.
Third off sequence behind Pato O'Ward and Joseph Newgarden, the two best oval drivers in this series.
On current form. Yeah.
Newgarden's won every one of the last six ovals bar one. And that was Iowa Race 2, which he was leading for over half of that race until his rear suspension failed. Palou does not have a weakness at this point. He is perfect. he's making Scott Dixon look silly out there. This is ridiculous.
This is the house that Dixon built, and Palou is just like, actually, it's mine now. You pay rent in it.
RJ, this kid from Super Formula, pretty good.
Yeah. And I could apply that to the hiring process at a certain team at Faenza for next season. You got to go out there and find these dudes. Last bit of news. This one came through the wire from Tony Donahue that IndyCar is debating. They're in advanced talks to move its season finale and awards banquet to Nashville with the Music City Grand Prix as soon as next year, per people familiar. This is from the tweet shared by Sports Business Journal's Adam Stern, who is also reported on the story. So I do want to preface that the Music City Grand Prix is going to have a layout change because, if you don't know, Nashville is building a new NFL stadium to replace Nissan Stadium, which is less than 25 years old at this point in time. But the debate of replacing stadiums with new stadiums, that's for another podcast. I don't know how I feel about
this. Welcome to Football 101.
Oh, yeah.
Please, God, no.
Not in its current iteration. The only reason why you would move it to Nashville in its current state is because we want to have our finale in a destination city.
And I think it's partly because Laguna Seca doesn't draw fans. I think there was less than 10,000 at the finale last year. It's not an attendance heavy finale round. It just isn't.
Which is a shame because it's a wonderful, wonderful track. It's in Northern California. It's got everything you would need. Okay, maybe you don't have the most exciting wheel to wheel racing there, but generally speaking, it's a traditional IndyCar venue, and people love that shit.
Look, it's exciting when Grosjean and Johnson are there.
Yeah, no kidding. Spear. Anyway, and a spear by Reigns. No, I'm joking. The way I see it, I get it. I get why. I mean, Nashville is a new round. It's in a great location for a race. Yep. I know it's a draw to the local community. Yeah,
it's a little bit sports washy with the way things are under Governor Bill Lee, but it is a cool
city. Yeah, you know, everybody sports watches these days. You know, we just like to judge the brown ones more. But that's how I look at it anyway. the way I see it, Nashville is a popular tourist spot, and it draws a bigger crowd than most IndyCar rounds do. I still say you make Long Beach your finale. That actually draws huge attendances, and the racing, okay, it's not wonderful at Long Beach either, but then again, neither is Laguna Seca's, and they had 75,000 at Long Beach this year. When we had Ruby Acosta on as a guest, she adequately described it. The place was rocking. Maybe it wouldn't be the same if it was in September, but even still, I don't understand. Nashville is not a popular round for fans who watch the sports on TV because we've had 17 cautions in the 2 years we've gone there. It's just
both
not
races have been a complete shit show.
Yeah, I was going to say, they need a layout change. They need to at least get that in the can first. They're not going to have a choice to either way, but still.
I 100% agree with that. I think you absolutely need a layout change if you're even going to consider that. I just think there's better candidates for an IndyCar season finale. I still would like to see the season finish at an oval. personally. I would like to see that be the way to end out a year. But again, the oval scene is faded in IndyCar by the looks of it.
Wasn't there this 2 mile super speedway in Southern California around Los Angeles, which of course is a big city. Had some great racing years. Whatever happened to Auto Club Speedway?
They blew it up.
Well, they're trying to.
And Zoe in the background was like, bring back Homestead.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. Like, Homestead Miami is not a recklessly dangerous super speedway oval to have an IndyCar race. And it's in Miami. Yes, again, you have the sports watching problem, but you're in a major city at a track that last time we went there, the racing was pretty good.
100%. Yeah, not for me, Chief, is the short answer to that one. You know, I like Laguna Seca. If you're that concerned about crowd turnout, why not just move Long Beach? Just move Long Beach to the finale. I think that works just fine. It's an iconic staple round, big turnout, cheap tickets, good vibes. And you'll get 50,000 Pato fans there for the finale. And this was literally the finale 2 years ago. So why not, right? Like, that's how Palou won his first title. It was at Long Beach. So why not? I think you had a good idea going on with that, personally. But that's just me. Right. IndyCar is done for this episode. We'll be back next week for another IndyCar race. Well, two, actually, because we're going to be doing the doubleheader at Iowa. Who likes corn? Who wants some corn?
Praise be to the corn.
Praise be. Glory to the corn. And I hope you sleep comfortably with the dulcet tones of Joseph Newgarden screaming, Simon! Like that one please, time on YouTube.
Please get well soon, Simon.
Please get well soon, Simon.
This is not the race where you want to come back in these conditions in a stretch. But, you know, hoping for the best there. Connor Daly's going to fill in. Connor Daly will be fine for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. And hey, if you're down there, you get an Ed Sheeran concert chucked in for free. Who doesn't want a bit of Ed Sheeran in their lives? Don't all rush in at once.
Me. I don't know, Chief. That feels like a negative wins above replacement transaction here.
Especially when the tickets were like $300 each as a result.
I'll take the fax machine, thanks.
Yeah, so like I said, IndyCar is back next weekend for the doubleheader in Iowa. We'll be reviewing all of that action. We'll also be talking about Formula One because they have the Hungarian Grand Prix this weekend as well. Will Red Bull make history with its 12th potential win in a row? The all-time F1 record awaits.
Well, Dre, you'll be happy to know that they are bringing an extensive upgrade for about two-thirds of their car.
Fuck. Great, why? Have fun with that.
Because fuck them, that's why.
Exactly. The Sickos Committee will be back in blue, purple, and yellow before you know. And hey, we'll talk a little bit about some Honey Badger coming back. Well, we'll talk a little bit about that on next week's show as well. So, yeah, it'll be a fun time. So there'll be two more episodes next week. Have fun with that. Until then, I've been Dre Harrison. They've been RJ O'Connell and Cam Buckley. And until next time, make your week as straight and narrow as Alex Palou's front wing. Sayonara.
Later, y'all.
Mentally, I am here. Sees the nose cone cracking across.